On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Come on, get a little closer. Come on, gather around.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. How are you today? You're looking unusually fit. Did you walk a lot? Did you do exercise yesterday? Did you do your legs, your abs? Your chest, your arms? Did you concentrate on a certain part of your body? I didn't. I don't do that stuff. I figure eating is enough exercise for me. The chewing motion gets my metabolism going. That's all I need. And then I'll swallow the food. That exercises my throat. And eventually the food reaches my stomach where there's various digestive operations going on. And I'm digesting my food, and various chemicals are being introduced into my organs in order to break the food down. That's a lot of work by my organs in there. I can feel it. And then, of course, later on, next day, there are other similar actions which exercise other parts of my body. So I'm really, really physically fit just because I eat a lot. You see, there's an answer for everything. Like, come on, seriously. Today, later on the show, my guest is going to be Dr. James Kiley, and he's going to talk about a medical deal. Do a lot of medical stuff on this show because, my God, it's important that you laugh a little bit. We're very lighthearted on this program. We don't take things too seriously. And we take a look at life experiences, and we go through them together, and we make fun of them because you got to laugh a little bit. Seriously. I mean, come on. That's why they invented emojis. God, I hate emojis. I got a text yesterday. Simple text, like, thank you very much, something like that. I don't know, remember who it was from or what I said, but they said, thank you very much. And after that, there were like 7 or 8 emojis. A lot of them were like, it was a smiley face for the first 3. Then it turned into jubilation face. And then I have no idea what the last 3 or 4 emojis were. I couldn't even see them. Don't do it. Stop it. Stop it. You know who started this emoji stuff? Yeah, it was cocktail waitresses and restaurant servers. They started this. I don't get the bill at the end of a meal. I get some type of an emoji love note from these people. I don't. how do you mix the fact that I owe you $53.11 with smiley happy faces? You got a smiley happy face because I'm about to pay you $53.11. It's the tip you're looking for, isn't it? So you cozy up to me a little bit. You figure if you put a couple of smiley faces on a check, it means that you love me. That we're going to have children together, so tip me. I mean, what are you trying to achieve by putting a smiley face on my check? Am I supposed to feel better? Hey, guess what? This has been the best day ever. I went to a restaurant, and I think the waitress liked me. She put a smiley face on my bill. Oh, wow, that should make your day. It did, it did. And somehow this blossomed into emojis, and I don't even understand what they are. Seriously, don't I? I've never used an emoji in my life. The only time I use an emoji in a text message was to be sarcastically absurd about it. I anti-emojied myself. I don't remember what it was. I think I was saying something very, very nice and very uplifting, and then I did five emojis of a face breaking down into tears, pain, and heartache. And I know the person that I sent it to had no idea what I was doing. Is he serious? Is he being sarcastic? If anybody says anything behind my back, and they probably do after I've put my back to them, they probably say, was he being serious or sarcastic? I think that's going to follow me for the rest of my life and then some. It will be my legacy. Ron, he was a nice man. He was a little grumpy, but he was a nice man. But I got a question for you. Was he being serious or sarcastic? I don't know. There's no way to read that guy. I really don't know. Did you listen to his radio show? No, I didn't. No, because I couldn't understand. I didn't know if he was being serious or sarcastic. I just don't know. Keep him guessing, baby. Keep him guessing. So later on in the show, we have a doctor with us, and we're going to talk about a condition that you can kind of take care of yourself. Doctors are interesting. I just went for my annual physical recently. I have a female doctor, as I've said many times on the show. I do female doctors because I don't want men touching me. I'm sorry, it's just the way I am. I have no phobias against that per se. But especially at a physical, where they're touching me quite a bit, I don't want another man doing that. I figure that's really not their place. And it does make me uncomfortable. I mean, I'm not into that. I have a female doctor. She has the run of the land. She can do whatever she likes. There's that part of the exam where they, how can I put this tastefully? They check your prostate and they do an invasive search and seizure through the back door, so to speak. I don't want a man doing that. I'm sorry. We didn't even have dinner or go to a movie or anything. I mean, you're not doing that. A female, yeah, go for it. Whatever. You know, I am an amusement park. Enjoy the ride. Go for it. I really don't care. I don't even like having that cuff put around my arm when they take my blood pressure. I don't want a guy touching my arm. I don't know why. Maybe I do have a phobia. I really don't know. I've never had a male massage me. Every once in a while, I'll have a back massage or a neck massage because I'm a very intense person. But I will not have a man massage me. I don't think it's proper. You can change the oil in my car if you'd like to. You can build me a closet, but you can't touch me. You just can't. If you're a female, I'm not going to stop you. Go for it. So anyway, how did I get onto that? Wait a minute. So I went for my physical and all that. And it reminded me when I was young. I was young and vibrant at one point in my life. I actually did things. I actually would wake up in the morning and do stuff. It's very foreign to me now. Now I wake up in the morning and I just look around like I'm in a stupor. Where am I? What am I supposed to do? Whatever it is, I don't feel like doing it. When I was young, I had so much energy. I could tackle the world in 5 minutes. I don't have that anymore. I lost that. I don't know where it went. I lost it somewhere, like my keys. So when I was young, I was a young adult. I was going to college at the time, and I had an apartment in Jackson Heights, New York, which is in the borough of Queens. I don't know why they call them boroughs. That reminds me of donkeys. And I don't really understand why I would live in a section of a donkey. But they call them boroughs. Spelled differently, but you say it the same. So to me, it's the same. And Jackson Heights was a small community. See, in New York City, you don't go from town to town. You just call them different sections. I had a very, very small apartment, very comfortable. Everybody in New York has small apartments. Nobody has a large apartment, unless you're a billionaire. And the family doctor was down the street on, I think it was 74th Street and 34th Avenue. That means nothing to you. I'm just being very specific. And you would walk into this apartment building, and on the first floor, there'd be a very accessible door, and it would say on it, Dr. Golden. That was his name, Dr. Golden. He was the doctor of the neighborhood. He probably had 7 million patients. He had a lot of patients. In New York City, there's a lot of people who live on top of each other. The population is huge. Huge. If I had anything wrong with me, I would go to Dr. Golden. And there were no clinics back then. There were no medical groups. It was a guy who had a place on the first floor of an apartment building, and he was a doctor. It was an odd setup. If you didn't live in New York City, you don't know what I'm talking about, but that's what it was like. So I walked in the door. I had a chest cold. My chest was cold, and I was coughing and dripping and sneezing and all of those dwarfs. And you would open the door from the hallway, and you would walk into this room, this tiny little living room kind of setup. And on the other side of the room, which is very tiny, was this woman sitting at a desk. It was always a woman. The nurse and receptionist was always a woman, and the doctor was always a man. There were no variations. That's just the way it was. And this woman would be, she would be nurse/receptionist. My doctor didn't need a nurse because he basically didn't do much of anything. So sitting out in this room at a small desk would be this woman who was semi-dressed like a nurse just in case she had to do something. And very close to this little receptionist table, it was just a table, it wasn't a receptionist desk, it was just a table. Very close to that were a lot of chairs, very close to each other. This was not a big room. It was probably about 10 by 10, very small, for a doctor's office, quote unquote. And in these chairs would be sick people. These would be people that would be really sick. All kinds of diseases from all parts of the neighborhood. They were all represented. What disease are you representing? Psoriasis. I'm psoriasis. And what are you representing? Chest cold. Chest cold. And what are you representing? Arthritis. Shoulder. Really bad. Painful. Yeah, a little bit of every disease going on there. It was like we are the world. It was that kind of thing. All diseases coming together in one room. And if you didn't have the other person's disease, within 5 minutes, you will get it. Because all the chairs were close to each other, so close that you couldn't help but touch the person with psoriasis, etc. By the way, you don't get psoriasis by touching somebody. I'm just saying. But certainly my chest cough was definitely being shared with other people. See, back then you could share things simply by sitting in a room with them as opposed to having to go onto Facebook or Twitter or something. You could share immediately. And the receptionist slash nurse said, hi, Ron. You know, it was a neighborhood. Everybody knew each other, especially the receptionist if you were a patient of the doctor. The doctor would be in a room that would be immediately behind a receptionist desk. and that was a small room as well. That room was no more than 6 feet by 6 feet. There was just enough room for me, the doctor, and my disease. And after sitting in the room, gathering everybody else's ailments, the receptionist slash nurse would say, "Ron, you're next." And I would walk into the room. It wasn't a waiting room. You just walked into the room and the doctor would be sitting there. My doctor, Dr. Golden, was about 125 years old. I guess he was about 60 or 65, I suppose, at that time. And here's what set Dr. Golden apart from all the other doctors in the universe. He chain smoked. He chain smoked while he worked as a doctor. You would walk into this examining room, it would be thick with smoke. See, back then, when I was a young tot, everybody smoked. I mean, everybody smoked. And if you didn't smoke, you smelled like smoke because somebody near you was always smoking. Everybody smoked. My doctor chain smoked. If you looked irony up in the dictionary, you would see a picture of Dr. Golden smoking while he examined patients. Because back then, smoking was not a horrible thing. It was actually an anxiety reliever. That's impossible to say. An anxiety remover. It calmed people down. Everybody smoked. Everybody smoked. Babies were smoking. Fetuses were sucking on a cigarette. Everybody was smoking. People knew it wasn't probably good for you, but they didn't care. There was no talk about that. There was nothing like, "Don't smoke, it'll kill you." Nah, nobody said that stuff. They had better things to do. So Dr. Golden's puffing away, and he says, "Turn your head and cough." And I said to him, "You turn your head and cough. Apparently you need it more than I do." Dr. Golden, though, he was a good doctor because even though he chain smoked, he never coughed. Never coughed. I said, "Oh, that's pretty cool. This guy, maybe is smoking something that's going to kill him, but he sounds good. Sounds good, though." So I got my examination from Dr. Golden, and he prescribed something for me, some kind of pill. I don't know what it was, and told me when to take it, how often, all that kind of stuff. And then we went into an office that was next to the examining room, which was also very small. This was only about 6 foot by 6 foot as well. And that was it for the whole doctor's office thing. And he had a big desk. He had a big executive desk, and he had his diplomas on the wall. Nobody really cares. Well, back then, they didn't care where you went to school. Because offices were all messy. Everything was messy. There was always papers all over the place, especially in these small cell phone doctors, all these doctor offices. They didn't, you know, it was just the nurse receptionist and the doctor, and that was it. There were no employees. That was it. Many times, the doctor's receptionist slash nurse would be his wife. Or they'd fall in love, because after the doctor day was over, they'd just go onto the examining table and do their thing, if you know what I'm saying. I don't know where Dr. Golden went to school, because his diploma was like all rattled and the glass was shattered. It was just a mess. Just a mess in there. Well, eventually, I guess my cold went away. But Dr. Golden apparently passed away when I was still quite young. He didn't live much longer than that. And the entire neighborhood, I remember, was mourning because everybody knew him and he was a good man. Just smelled like cigarettes all the time. Dr. Golden died of emphysema, which was a lung incapacity, let's say. Emphysema. I wonder why he got that. Huh. Who knew? Anyway. So I thought today we would talk to Dr. James Kiley. We're going to talk about COPD. Now, of course, everybody knows smoking is horrible. Not many people smoke anymore. Things are just totally different as far as that's concerned, and that's a wonderful thing. Back then, no. Things are better now. So, here we go. Hello, Dr. Kiley. How are you?
Morning, Ron. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you. Dr. James Kiley is Director of the Division of Lung Diseases at the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute at the National Institute of Health. And we're talking about COPD, which I think most of us are familiar with. Can you elaborate on the letters?
Absolutely. COPD is short for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and this is a serious lung disease that over time makes it very hard to breathe. Other names for COPD that people oftentimes hear and associate with this is emphysema or chronic bronchitis, and these are two ends of a spectrum that all are encompassed under an umbrella term COPD.
Okay.
So COPD develops very slowly. It takes many years for people to realize it, and that's why it's very important that we raise awareness about the symptoms that one might face when they are at risk for COPD.
Now, is COPD treatable, detected early enough?
Yes, that's the good news. Over the years, we've made some great research progress. At one time, COPD was thought to be irreversible and resistant to treatment. And over the years, we've learned a lot through our research programs and efforts that there are ways that one can manage this disease. And clearly, early detection through simple breathing tests can lead to effective treatment. So it's really important to recognize those symptoms, because everyone that is at risk may have this disease can live a good quality of life because there are treatments to manage the symptoms. Unfortunately, we don't have a cure. Mm-hmm. We're working on that. But right now, we can improve individuals' quality of life through a number of means with early detection and successful management.
I know in passing, the term pneumonia comes into play quite a bit. Is that the technical term for all of this?
No, not really. Okay. Pneumonia can be associated with COPD, and when you oftentimes see that is when individuals have what's called an exacerbation or a flare-up of their disease. Their disease can be triggered off by a number of things, makes it worse, makes their breathing harder. Oftentimes, individuals get hospitalized. They end up in critical care units. Sometimes pneumonia can develop where there's fluid in the lung, bacteria in the lung, and that's really what leads to the pneumonia. That's a complication, a secondary effect of COPD, but it's not really COPD. It's not the cause of COPD, but it is a contributing factor, particularly for those who may get these flare-ups.
All right. So what are some of the symptoms that we may be aware of? Well, let me first ask you, is this an age-related disease, or can it be?
It's oftentimes associated with age, but it's not necessarily totally an age-related disease. It usually occurs in people over the age of 40 with a history of smoking. So environmental exposures play a role. Genetics plays an important role. And you can be very young. You can have what's called alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency. That's the genetic form of COPD. And that can be, individuals can be recognized with that very, very early in life. And so there are many different ways in which this disease comes on. We know smoking is associated yeah. with it, so long-term smoking clearly is a factor.
That's for sure. And again, if you stop smoking for an extended period of time, you can actually limit the possibilities of COPD, right? Or is that pretty much done?
Well, there are two elements to that question. One is when you get an immediate benefit from stopping smoking in your cardiovascular health. That's something we know, and that's important that everybody recognizes that smoking has widespread health implications or effects. But with your cardiovascular system, it does kind of improve when you quit.
Okay.
With the lung, you get some improvement, but over time, your lung function will still decline. It will decline in a normal age-related unrelated way, that it declines with aging. But on the other hand, it stays lower than it would be if you never smoked. So you are still susceptible to COPD even after you've quit.
Okay. All right. Now, I get so confused between allergies, cold congestion in my chest, and what we're talking about, because they all, I mean, you feel a little tight in your chest, there's a lot of phlegm, and there's, you have a little trouble breathing here and there, or more trouble than you were would otherwise. And I personally say to myself, oh my goodness, is this a result of anything? Are my colds more intense breathing-wise because of this? How do you know what's what?
So it's really important that you recognize the symptoms, and that's step number one. Mm-hmm. So if you are a smoker, a former smoker, if you are at risk for COPD, whether you have the genetic version or not, you want to recognize that if you're having chronic cough, difficulty breathing, difficulty taking a deep breath, difficulty doing everyday tasks, that may be a signal or a sign that you may be at risk for COPD. Mm-hmm. Now, allergies, colds, viruses, bacterial, you know, occupational exposures, all of those things can trip it off. And if it's tripping it off on an occasional, basis, it's just a cold, it runs its course, it's done, that's probably not as serious. But if that is a chronic condition where you're still having difficulty catching your breath, doing everyday activities, that's something more serious. You need to see your healthcare provider get tested for COPD.
Okay. When we go to have our annual checkup, and everybody should, no matter what age they are, that's bottom line, obviously, I always get a breathing test. And they say, oh, okay, that's good. Or they put the little thing on my finger and they say, oh, your oxygen level is good. Is that indicative of what we're talking about? Does that have nothing to do with this?
Well, it has a little bit to do with it, but in fact, if you want to diagnose COPD, you really have to have a lung function test. You have to have something called spirometry. And many people oftentimes don't have this conversation with their healthcare provider, their doctor. And you might want to do that, particularly if, as I mentioned before, you have some symptoms that around your breathing that concern you, then you might want to bring that up with your provider and say, you know, is it possible to get my lungs tested? And then, you know, that's what would be the step towards taking to early detection and making sure that you can either rule in or rule out COPD. There are ways in which one can do it without spirometry, but the definitive diagnosis is this simple breathing test, and it's quite easy to do, very automated, not painful, and you may want to ask for it because it's not part of usually a normal physical or health checkup.
Now, is that part of the National Action Plan?
The National Action Plan has five goals to it. They all cover various aspects of the disease, and they touch on many, many different sections that we need to address. There is a section on improving diagnosis, prevention, treatment, and management of COPD, and this is targeted toward the healthcare provider to improve the quality of care delivered across the healthcare continuum. So what's important here is that the provider recognize the symptoms, has the conversation with the patient, the individual, and then takes appropriate steps to do the appropriate diagnostic procedures.
Okay, but in the long run, as we talk about any diseases and one's health, it's the responsibility of us, the individuals, to manage our own health and to bring things up, not to just put it all on the doctor to discover things that we may not be aware of. You know, keeping your mind open and realize that you're in charge of your own body. Is that also the message?
That is a message, and we've done some surveys through our Learn More, Breathe Better program here at the NIH, and we've recognized that this is a two-way partnership with the patient and the provider. I mean, the patient has to bring up issues around their breathing. They have to talk to their doctor about the symptoms in order to get tested. The doctors also have to recognize that there's things that we can do today that maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago they didn't think was available. So they need to update their skills and knowledge so that they can also take appropriate steps towards providing an accurate diagnosis and then and then an appropriate treatment management plan.
Okay. How do we get more information?
Yeah, there's plenty of places, lots of tools and sources for information. The one that we would point you to is copd.nih.gov. You can find a lot of information about the COPD National Action Plan there, and also that will take you to our Learn More, Breathe Better site, where we also have lots of useful information for patients, for providers, and for the public at large.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for the information today. It's very important, and I'm glad that we got through this today. Dr. Colley, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. My pleasure. You too.
Bye-bye.
The Ron Van Dam Show is intended for mature audiences.
Oh, so that's what ironic means.
Yes, honey. Yes, it does.
Yeah, I think that was insulting, I think. Well, continuing with our doctor theme today, it's the doctor theme. Did you know that? It is. Oh, yeah. I thought we would, there's a new concept in doctorship. Of course, now you don't go to family doctors anymore in their houses or in their apartments. You go to medical groups. Everything's in a medical group, and the doctors are basically mere employees at that point. Now we've taken it a step further with the Internet Highway of Safety, the Internet informational path of highways. The HTTPs, the WWWs, the DDDs. Now we've taken a different path. There's a thing called Doctor on Demand where you can see a doctor online. You don't have to go to a doctor's office, a medical group, a hospital. Well, I don't know about a hospital, but you can have a conversation with a doctor face-to-face online on your computer. You can see their face if you have a rash or something or some type of a cut, or some, they can see it on the camera. They can diagnose you, actually send a prescription to your pharmacy from the comfort of your home. It's almost like making house calls, but they don't have to come to your house. They see you on a computer screen. I don't know. To hear about this, I was quite enthralled about it. I thought, this is pretty cool. Because instead of going to WebMD or something online to try to figure out what you have and if you should be concerned or not, if it's cancer, if you're going to die, you can actually have a doctor come on your screen and personally talk to that doctor face to face. I thought it was pretty cool. So we're going to tell you about that right now. This is interesting stuff. Hello, Dr. Hawthorne.
Hi, Ron.
How are you today?
I am great. Thanks for having me.
We're looking forward to speaking to you. Dr. Heather Hawthorne is a board-certified family practice physician with Doctor on Demand. This is a new concept, sort of, isn't it, this telemedicine thing?
It is. It's amazing. You know, I'm a physician, as you mentioned.
Yes.
But instead of seeing patients in a traditional clinic, I actually see patients through their smartphone. With telemedicine, patients don't have to go to a clinic. They don't have to go to a hospital. They can actually connect within a matter of minutes using their computer, their laptop, tablets, and then connect with a doctor and get their health issues addressed.
Okay. I got tons of questions for you in a short amount of time, so here we go.
Let's go.
Okay. Does insurance cover this type of quote-unquote office visit?
Ron, that's a great question. So millions of Americans have coverage through their insurance plan. A lot of them don't even know. I know Doctor on Demand, the company I work for, takes a lot of different insurances, and you can always go to our website or call our customer support to find out. And if not, if you don't have coverage, it's available for a reasonable fee. It's a lot more affordable than those unnecessary urgent care and ER visits.
Fantastic. Okay. Now, I assume that in many cases, you would say, well, you're going to have to see your doctor because I can't diagnose without touching you and stuff like that, you know. I mean, I guess there are limitations to it?
There are limitations, but you'd be surprised how many day-to-day health issues we can actually address. With video medicine, I'm able to do an exam. I just kind of coach the patient through the things I would do in the clinic.
Okay.
There are a few things where there are some limitations, but I'm able to guide them through most of an exam and observe things that I would observe in a clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I go over their entire health history. We talk about all their symptoms, just like we do in an office setting, and often able to give a diagnosis and, when necessary, start treatment.
That's great. So in other words, if I had some kind of a rash that I was very concerned about, I could show it to you through the teleconferencing.
Absolutely. We see a lot of rashes. We see, I take care of acne and eczema, all kinds of skin conditions. It's a great format for that.
Are you able to dispense prescriptions as well?
We do. When medications are necessary, we have the ability to electronically prescribe. So usually within, you know, less than 2 hours from the time I disconnect, you know, the visit with you, your prescription is ready at your local pharmacy for you to pick up.
Dr. Heather, isn't this a lot, there's a lot of psychology involved in the sense that if something's bothering me, I get anxious about it because I don't know what it is. I need immediate answers. I would go to some website and probably get the wrong information. And I would get very anxious about it, which could make my situation even worse. So the psychology of having an expert talk to you one-on-one about this, this thing that's bothering you is an amazing relief.
Ron, that is a great point. I see so many patients who went online and came up with the diagnosis of cancer before they called me.
Sure.
It seems like whatever website you go to, your symptoms always end up with it's cancer or something serious. But I joke, but you know, there's something really powerful about being able to have a face-to-face video encounter with a physician right when you feel that there's a problem. Instead of, you know, seeing a local doctor, it can take as much as 3 weeks. Once you get that appointment, it can take almost 3 hours from the time you leave your home, your office, get there, get back. So without all that unnecessary time, you can get your questions answered. With the company I work for, Doctor On Demand, we're all board-certified physicians. We have psychiatrists. We have licensed therapists. So you know you're getting high-quality care when you contact us through telemedicine.
Wow. And I would rather wait in my house than in a waiting room at some strange doctor's office where everybody else is sneezing and coughing with me in the background and getting me sick. So this is, it just makes sense totally. Is it also available for things beyond physical concerns? Could there be mental concerns, that kind of thing, stress, anxiety, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. One of the nice things about being a telemedicine physician is I do feel like I get to engage with patients more about their stress, anxiety, depression. You can get relationship counseling through telemedicine. And it's nice because you're doing it from the comfort of your own environment, whether it's your home or a lunch break at work. You don't feel rushed. You feel a little bit calmer. You're just more at ease, and you can really get good support from physicians through telemedicine for these kinds of issues that, you know, they often go untreated, which is really worrisome, but it's very expensive and difficult to get in a lot of times with, you know, your physicians and your therapists. But through telemedicine, you get to do it on your terms.
Okay. How does this work? Is it done through like a Skype kind of method? How does this actually physically happen?
Yeah, the technology for the company I work with is a little more robust than Skype, but basically a device that's in your pocket right now, probably, your smartphone, any device with a video. With Doctor On Demand, you just download our app or go to our website, type in your symptoms, and within a matter of minutes, you're connected through video to one of our physicians. You can also schedule appointments, so if there's a preferred time or if this is something that can wait a few days and you know you want to see someone at a given time, you can schedule those appointments, but you don't have to be tech savvy. I mean, you're just using something that you probably already have and use every day, and you're able to get a, you know, an exam, a diagnosis, and treatment.
Okay, so if you're in San Francisco and I'm in Boston, it doesn't make any difference, really.
It doesn't make any difference. With telemedicine, physicians have to be licensed in the particular state where the patient is located. So with most of the national telemedicine companies, including ours, when you connect, it's automatically going to connect you with a doctor licensed in your state so that you can receive the treatment that you need.
And this is available in almost every state or every state?
Almost every state. I think right now Arkansas is the only one due to some, you know, legislature-type issues. We're not available there.
And they're the ones that need it. Okay, fine. Anything else I should know about this great technology?
No. I would just like to say that life is busy. We all know that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like too many people put their health in the back seat, and it prevents them from living life well. And with telemedicine, you don't have to. You, from anywhere, can get the help you need when you need it. It's affordable. It's covered by insurance. A lot of people aren't aware of it yet. And it's just, it's a really great resource for day-to-day health issues.
Wow. Fantastic. Wow. I'm on that. I'm telling you, it's doctorondemand.com. So easy to remember, doctorondemand.com. And it could be a lifesaver, at least mentally there, when you've got some type of stress. I can remember when I had children that were children age. As soon as they got a little bit sick, I went through the roof. I mean, like, oh my God, what do I do? What do I do? This is, man, I wish I was a parent at this point to be able to take advantage.
You know, that's a good point, Ron. I see so many parents with these young kids, and a lot of times they're just anxious and worried, and it's, you know, something minor. But traditionally, that would have resulted in a late night visit to an ER, where they probably would have picked up some other kind of illness. So this is a great way to get your questions answered and not have to drag the whole family to an ER late at night.
Great. Well, Dr. Heather Hawthorne, you're a great spokesperson, by the way, because you've stimulated this idea in all of us, and sounds like it's going to be in the near future the way to do things, other than seeing your doctor on a regular basis.
You should still see your doctor at least once a year for those routine checkups, but for day-to-day issues, we are available.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Ron. Have a great day.
Take care. Bye-bye. I will say that I, since that interview was pre-recorded a few days ago, since that interview I did go online and I checked many of the popular and basic insurance companies. I live in Massachusetts. I checked the one that I have, which is a major one, plus another major one. Plus I went to a few other states and looked at their major insurance carriers. None of them were accepted as insurance payments to Doctor on Demand. It is $75 for the basic contact that you would have to pay out of your pocket, unless indeed your insurance is accepted by Doctor on Demand. But I did find that many of them that are popular were not accepted. So I believe Doctor on Demand is in its infancy, and as time goes on, they will be hooking up with major insurance companies so that you can use their service. But until then, that's an out-of-pocket expense for you. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, have yourselves a wonderful... Thanks so much for spending the time with me today. Should we do this again tomorrow? Yeah, let's do that, Ron. Okay, wish you peace.